And a lot of the approach that we took around recycling the water that's taken to space, the air that astronauts breathe, even the calories that they eat, I thought, well, hang on a minute, why can't that technology and that process be applied here on Earth?
Hello, and welcome to the Business of Sustainability podcast, the latest show in partnership with Future Plus and City AM. My name is Alex Smith, and I'm joined by my co-host and fellow founder of Future Plus, Mike Penrose. I am delighted to introduce our excellent guest for today's show, Dr. Carl Grant, founder of Oxwash, the world's first truly sustainable commercial laundry cleaning service. In this episode, we'll be exploring Dr. Carl's journey from a space engineer at NASA to a founder of Oxwash, a company intent on disrupting one of the most traditional industries and making it more sustainable. Kyle, welcome. And Mike, I'll hand over to you for today's first question.
Thank you. Kyle, you probably get asked this all the time. Space to dry cleaning. How did that happen? It's not the most obvious jump that people would do. And I'm sure everyone's first question is, why did that happen? Where are the crossovers? What's the parallels you saw? And what was the skills transfer that you brought from space exploration to making sure that laundry is sustainable?
Sure. And thank you very much for having me today. I mean, as a washed up kind of ex-rocket scientist, it's not every day you get pulled into a studio. So SpaceX, NASA, the kind of aerospace career that I came from really gave me a large understanding of optimization of processes and of systems as a whole. So I specifically worked on the life support systems for human rated vehicles going into space from 2012 until today. And a lot of the approach that we took around recycling the water that's taken to space, the air that astronauts breathe, even the calories that they eat, I thought, well, hang on a minute, why can't that technology and that process be applied here on Earth? You know, we have a finite system here on the planet. Let's take those same principles, and in some cases, the technology as well, and apply it to an industry here on planet Earth. And that was really the genesis of the company.
But I think, and linked to that, you were saying about, you know, the processes that you looked at. As you know, we at Future Plus, we're big advocates of marginal incremental gains and of systems theory. You know, that's what you're alluding to there. So we've been lucky enough to visit your lagoons on a number of occasions. And what I always found most impressive was how you'd taken the things that everybody's used to today and just tweaked them at every single stage in the system. You've made some pretty big revolutionary changes as well, which I'll let you explain. But can you tell us a little more about what it is you've done to the process of dry cleaning and laundry and how that's having such an impact?
Yeah, so the way that we approach the system of cleaning textiles is four, sometimes five stages. The first is really to understand fundamentally what is required to clean textiles. And for our customers in hospitals, hotels, bedsheet scrubs, things like that, typically that's not just that the items look clean, but they're also disinfected from microorganisms. And also they don't smell of anything. So there's that kind of triple level of threat. Once we intimately understand that, we move on to the next step, which is simplification. So how do we take the service that a customer needs and our process and remove all of the old industrial pieces that have built up over decades of inefficient and antiquated, you know, development. And then we move on to the optimization, which is where we look at all of the parts of the process. You know, how do you collect the items? How do you sort them? How do you remove stains? How do you wash them? How do you dry them? How do you iron them? How do you fold them? How do you pack them? How do you deliver them again? Build that whole process into an optimized stack that we then automate, which is the fourth step. And that's the kind of cusp that we're on at the moment with the development of our next facility here in the UK, which will be the world's first completely net zero, fully automated laundry cleaning plant.
But I think within that as well, not many people understand the toxicity of commercial laundries and of dry cleaning. But one of the things we've been so impressed with is that the data you collect that informs the decisions you make that are creating those gains. So if you could elaborate a little more on both I was gobsmacked when you told me exactly how toxic the process could be, particularly dry cleaning, but then also how by analyzing every stage and collecting data, you've managed to reduce that quite considerably by making these small changes.
Of course, yeah. So just to kind of touch on the toxicity issue, and this industry is very opaque to the public. You know, how often does someone sleep in sheets in a luxury luxury hotel or, you know, go to hospital and unfortunately go under the knife and think about where did these textiles come from. It never enters the public consciousness, right? But when you go into commercial laundries that exist in these intercity industrial parks, it's like going back in time. You know, you're going back to a Victorian era sweatshop where there's steam, chlorine, bleach, perchloroethylene, a toxic solvent used in dry cleaning in very cramped, confined spaces. And somehow, magically, you're trying to produce clean textiles. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, talking about the kind of main two chemistries used, so sodium hypochlorite bleach for whitening and keeping textiles, you know, opalescent, and then perchloroethylene, the main dry cleaning solvent. Both of those are shown to cause cancer. They cause miscarriages in young mothers. They cause respiratory failure, irritation. It's a nightmare, let alone the evisceration of ecosystems when all of that's flushed down the drain, you know, several times an hour. It's just crazy. And we just believe that fundamentally that's wrong. It has to change, and we've never touched them.
And the changes you've made, what is it you do now that's different?
Yeah, so from the approach in aerospace to understanding all of the system as a whole, we're able to identify bottlenecks. So to give you a good example, one of those that we identified very early on was the energy required to heat water to then put into your washing machines to clean textiles. The energy requirement to heat water is massive. You know, it's a magnitude greater than heating air. And the time that it takes to do so in a plant is also massive. So when you're trying to optimize flow and volume and capacity, really that bottleneck is the main one by a long way. So we set out to eliminate that. We wash in cold water using ozone supersaturation to do so and some other really cool pieces of tech. But we're able to now demonstrate that that bottleneck removal has then unlocked the flux of laundry down the flow afterwards through drying, through ironing, things like that. But we had to build the whole data infrastructure to capture all of those data points first to understand where the bottleneck was. You know, often you can walk into a laundry room and think, well, there's a pile of stuff at the front door. That's probably the bottleneck just because you're looking at it. But as soon as you layer in IoT systems, data lakes, you're able to triage that with machine learning over time, you start to see more fundamental bottlenecks in your process that aren't immediately obvious. And so we had to build that from the ground up.
I mean, it's great to know that consumers are requesting the information and having those conversations. In terms of fundraising and investors, something that all startups and scale-ups seem to have at the front of their mind at all times, it's been sort of a tricky environment over the last couple of years, particularly in the UK for fundraising. Are you finding that the same messaging is useful in those conversations when you're having conversations for those fundraisers, and have they been valuable in the ones that you've done recently?
It's a really good question. I think there's a lot of interference and noise in the fundraising space when it comes to impact, sustainability, and of course, carbon emissions. And to cut through that noise with a fundamental framework that makes sense, that's easy to understand, it is, you know, quantified, not just qualified with greenwashing, is really important. We've got some really great investors that strongly believe in our mission of eliminating the impact of laundry and textile cleaning on the planet and its people. And they've really come on board several times, you know, in succession many times, because building technology, the iteration cycle, building plants is CapEx intensive if you're going to do it right. You can also do it cheap, but then unfortunately we end up like everybody else. Our move now moving forwards into the future is actually to transition away from venture capital investment and more to a hybrid approach of project finance for our plants and venture capital for innovation. And we have such strong revenues and cash flow now that we can do that. You know, we can bank contracts and say, look, we will build a plant to service your laundry requirements, go to market, find debt providers, and then bring on capital to be able to finance those projects with a payback period of, you know, 2 to 10 years. It's a much more infrastructure style of investment and capital raising, which suits us. And it's something that probably I should have learned a lot sooner, but better late than never, right?
And within that, you know, how much emphasis are you finding is being put on how sustainable you are, what you're measuring, the data you're collecting, and how you're reporting it?
Yeah, a lot, especially if you cut, you have conversations with investors that strongly believe in this. You know, there will be some funds, there will be partners at firms that have to tick a box as an exercise, which is frustrating. But those that deeply believe, you know, in impact and putting their dollars and pounds to good will ask to see the data, you know, and the due diligence will be tough. And it should be, because really you have to practice what you preach. And we like being held accountable to that level. I mean, frameworks that allow us to be ahead of the curve so that we can say, well, look, here's all the data neatly structured with the quantification for you that's in a consistent format that you see across lots of different investments is great. And we see that obviously more and more with Future Plus, but it is something that I believe will become completely de facto for all investors in the next decade, 100%.
Absolutely.
There's so much innovation in the process of what you're doing, but there's probably also a lot of language, not even counting the chemical names of what we've been talking about and what you're talking about, lagoons. Yeah. It's probably not something that most people are familiar with. And I think, you know, you're looking at the data, but you're also operating in an entirely different way. And you mentioned the new site, which I think is called Big Blue.
Correct.
This year. But can you give a little bit of explanation around what the concept of lagoons and Big Blue is and why that is also fundamental in that sort of change with the innovation?
Yeah, of course. So we run two formats of plants. So as a business model, we operate our own facilities that clean textiles, we collect and deliver them for customers ourselves. And from end to end, that process is either carbon neutral or net zero, depending on the facility. We have three generations now of facilities where the early ones are carbon neutral and now the newest ones are net zero, which is really cool.
Amazing.
And we've been able to scale the technology from the lagoon, which is the small format, usually around 1,000 to 3,000 square feet. We've got one in Oxford, one in Cambridge, one in Battersea, more kind of intercity, kind of light industrial units, to a much bigger hub, you know, more like an Amazon or DPD or HelloFresh, Ocado style CFC. That's 25,000 square feet and in Swindon. So that format shift is not only scaling the footprint of the site and the volume, but also the technology and the automation as well. So we're in our fourth generation now of cleaning process that we really constantly iterate. Something that the industry is really bad at is setting up programs on washing machines and leaving it for a decade and then going, well, hang on a minute, maybe we could have changed that a little bit sooner.
It's a really interesting mindset piece around like traditional and tech industries. If you think about tech, looking at MVPs and constantly moving forward, if it doesn't work, get rid of it. Whereas I think a lot of other industries, we've built it, so we'll use it. Mm. And I think there's a really interesting that you've put tech into something that is so traditional in order to make those decisions. Mm. In terms of communicating what it is that you're doing, obviously we're very lucky to work with Oxosh and have been doing for quite a while now, and you're impact certified through Future Plus. Are you finding that communication piece is really important when you're going out and talking to the end user who may know that they want to do something more sustainably? They know that laundry is a big part of what they do because they're, you know, in hotels or hospitals, but don't really know what that means. How are you finding that communication piece on the other side so that they can catch up with your innovation?
Yeah, it's so critical because, as we were saying, it's not immediately obvious the impact that laundry as a part of a supply chain has in terms of carbon emissions, water scarcity, you know, microfiber release, toxicity. But we've spent a lot of time as scientists and innovators really quantifying that. And so we know accurately how many megatons of CO2 are released through, you know, tumble dryers used at industrial scale in the UK. And disclaimer, it's massive and it's terrifying. But to communicate that to the public and to a decision maker in a, you know, hotel, let's take a head housekeeper, for example, takes time. You know, you need to fundamentally understand how do they analyze their supply chain? You know, how do they quantify this impact? And really, how do we sell into them? And we find that the Future Plus framework is good for two reasons. It allows us to become better and speak the lingo that needs to be spoken to get in the room, but equally allows us to constantly iteratively innovate and also upskill our team. Things like the B Corp standard, which we also have, are great and they're recognized, you know, by consumers and decision makers, but they are very stop-start. You're accredited and then you can wait 3 years before you're re-accredited. And in that 3 years, you can do almost nothing, if you like. That completely juxtaposes with our approach of constant innovation and, you know, iteration. And the Future Plus platform allows us to do that incremental improvement, analyze its improvement over time, and communicate it over time to our benefit, which is hugely differential.
We've always talked, we speak very much that same language. If the incentives are geared towards constant improvement, systems change. If they're geared towards marking copybooks, systems remain static. And that's, I think, one of the things we've loved about Oxwash so much is every time we talk to you, you're doing something new. You've tweaked this, you've tweaked that. We were having a conversation just now about tourist resorts and how some small tweaks linked to anaerobic digestion, for example, which creates biogas, which can then fuel more efficient dryers, et cetera, et cetera, are the type of thing we think could create real revolution as opposed to just a stamp. Yeah. But with that in mind, what's the future for you? What's the future for Oxwash? Is it clean pants on the moon? Or is it what are the revolutions you still want to see and make within laundry and dry cleaning?
Yeah, there's still a lot of, you know, room to grow. I mean, the industry has such a colossal impact that really we're only scratching the surface. We're fortunate in that we are starting to set an example to our, you know, competitors and industry friends and allies, in that they understand that our proposition is the future and that they need to change. And so the industry is slowly shifting in line with our values, which is great. It's my firm belief, though, that we need to see all laundry on the planet done by Oxwash or on our technologies in the next decade to avert a climate crisis, because it is a huge proportion of impact at the industrial level. And so for me and the company, really, that is seeing lots more big blues and lagoons across the globe, either operated ourselves or with partners, you know, like Disney, like NASA. There are lots of people that we're speaking with that need this solution for either their business operations or to miniaturize and put into space, interestingly, that we believe will then completely move the paradigm and decarbonize the industry from the ground up.
And that's laundry. You know, yourself, you're talking again but just about systems and changing systems here. Have you ever thought about any other industries that need cleaning up? And if so, what would they be?
Yeah, I'm pretty in bed with the laundry space now. I'm obsessed, I have to say. But if you twisted my arm and said you have to do something else, you've solved this problem. I think that there's a huge opportunity in genetic engineering of food. And I think that there will become a paradigm and a new green revolution for food and food security, that at the moment, the public opinion and that of legislation are completely misaligned. And now there's an opportunity soon to be able to fix that, which is exciting.
That felt like a suitable curveball from Oxwash as well.
Alex was laughing because we're so aligned on this. I love always holding up, for example, one of the countries that it sort of proclaims the most against genetic engineering, France, when you remind them that every vine grown in France is genetically engineered because of its response to phylloxera and the bonding of North American rootstock to French vines. And I think GM is so misunderstood. Mm. Everybody thinks it's tinkering with things at the genetic level. Quite often it's just merging a rootstock to a vine and making it more resistant to disease. So I couldn't agree with you more on that one.
So clean clothes, glasses of red wine from France, and trips to the moon. Unfortunately, I think that's all we've got time for, but a big thank you, Kyle, for joining us today. Please remember to hit the subscribe button for future episodes. And if you'd like to find out more about Future Plus or Oxwash, please visit the links in the description.